introduce the concept of quantum mechanics and path integrals at Euclidean time, while also talking about path integrals in physical time. So what we are going to do today is I'll discuss a bit more what are some examples and application of path integrals at Euclidean time and also at physical time. I'm going to discuss a few more points. And then, if time, I'll start to discuss application to quantum field theory, so not only non-relativistic quantum mechanics. So first, we have seen last time that for path integrals in physical time, if we insert function of the position inside the path integrals, that's a way to construct in path integrals time-ordered products of operators, so matrix elements. We have seen that inserting the path integral real time with some initial and final condition, some Q of T1, for instance, Q of T2, give you some matrix element depending on the boundary condition of the time-ordered product of the quantum operator Q of T1 and Q of T2. Okay. And the same for general functions of Q. So this gives time ordered product. Okay. So now you may ask, is there something similar for Euclidean path integrals? So I'm going to discuss now something quite different. I take the same kind of object, but I define it in Euclidean time. So I defined a path integral over Euclidean trajectory, exponential minus 1 over h bar times the Euclidean action for this Euclidean trajectory. And I'm going to consider the simple case where I consider just that I have periodic trajectories. Okay, with a period which is related to the temperature. So I assume that QE at initial time is equal to QE at some final time tau, but it may vary. And so this, we know that this is the object that constructs the partition function of this quantum mechanical system described by this action, but at finite temperature. The relation between the temperature and the period is that the period tau is h bar over kb times the temperature. Okay, so now let's consider the analog of this object. So I introduce here some Q or some function of Q at the origin of time. So Q of zero, for instance. Since it's periodic, it's not important. So you imagine that you have this kind of path integral. This is Euclidean time, sigma. So this is the position. I integrate over all trajectory at Euclidean time with just the fact that the initial and the final time are the same. Okay, and somewhere here, well, I could have introduced this at any tau 1, for instance. This is a period, tau. And at any tau 1 here, I introduce here this Q, or some function of Q. Okay, so what is this? Well, that's easy, because again, as we did for this case, we can just fix the position here, Q at T1, at tau1, in compute the path integral, the Euclidean path integral, and then integrate over Q1. So we can rewrite this as integral over dQ1. And then we have a path integral where now this is periodic and the value of the position of the particle at Euclidean time tau1 is fixed. But that we know what it is. This is a matrix element between some fixed initial and final position, which are here Q1, of the evolution operator at Euclidean time during a time evolution that goes there, 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 so it's during a time tau. Okay. So this is just a trace because we still are performing a sum over periodic trajectories. So this is a trace of this object, which is, oh, I'm sorry, but I omitted something very important. I omitted the Q1. Yeah. But this is the position operator. So this is now, instead of being the trace of ue of tau, this is a trace of ue of tau times the operator q. Because this integrated over this is just the quantum operator position. Okay. So instead of having the trace of the Euclidean evolution operator, you have the trace of this evolution operator multiplied by some operator q. Okay. But we know that ue of tau is just the quantum Boltzmann factor for the system. So this is just the trace of exponential minus beta times the Hamiltonian of our systems times q, where h is the Hamiltonian. Okay. So this is the object that we had here. But remember, that's because this exponential minus beta h is proportional to the density matrix of the mixed state, of the Gibbs state of the system. So let's now compute the trace of the density matrix using this and what we did yesterday. Now I want to compute the trace of rho beta, let's say, this is the density matrix of the system in a Gibbs state. And beta is, of course, 1 over Boltzmann constant times the temperature times this operator Q. Okay. So, now, this is a trace of some observable, some operator times rho. So this is just the expectation, the quantum expectation value of the operator q, so the average position of the particle, but in a Gibbs state. So not in the vacuum state or in some definite eigenstate, but in a mixed state. Okay, that's a general definition of the expectation value of an operator in a mixed state. Okay? Well, we know that rho beta, the density matrix, is just ue of tau divided by its trace, a normalization. So, this is just trace of ue of tau times q divided by the trace of ue of tau. This is a partition function. So this is a ratio of two path integrals. This one, dq e minus 1 over h bar se of q. This is an Euclidean path integral times q of tau 1 divided by integral over dq e minus 1 over h bar se of q. That's very easy to see. So it's just you had this normalization factor, which is given by a path integral, to get this. And of course, that's with periodic trajectory histories with period tau equal h bar over kbt or h bar beta with our notation. Okay. Okay, so you see that's quite elementary. So this is a way how to construct expectation value of operators in a mixed state of the system at finite temperature by path integrals. But Euclidean path integral. So this is E. And this is the Euclidean measure. Okay, so this is what you need to know. Okay. Okay, so that's pretty simple. But there is an interesting consequence of that. It's not very easy to, it's not very difficult to see it, which is that when you take the limit when beta goes to infinity, this is the limit when the temperature goes to zero. Okay. But when the temperature goes to zero, remember that the density matrix rho beta, okay, is just for a Gibbs state, a sum over the energy eigenstate from I equals zero to infinity, energy eigenstate, of E minus beta EI times the projector on each energy eigenstate divided by just the trace of this, so the sum over I equals zero to infinity of E minus beta EI, this is a number. This is a partition function. So this is the definition. Okay, so you see that when beta goes to infinity, only the lowest energy eigenstate stays there, because that's the smallest factor, it's cancelled between this and this. So in the limit, in this limit, then what you recover is rho of infinity, which is just 0, 0. So it's a projection operator on the ground state. That's the ground state. Okay. So you see that if you want to recover expectation value of operators of physical observable on the ground state only, so if we want to recover zero, some operator Q times zero, so this is then we see simply have to take this ratio of path integral in the limit when the period tau goes to infinity. Remember that tau is 1 over the temperature of this ratio of path integral, of Euclidean path integral, dq E minus 1 over h bar se times q divided by integral of dq E minus 1 over h bar se. Okay. So you see that Euclidean path integral can be used to recover vacuum to vacuum matrix elements. So in quantum mechanics, that's quite simple to see, and that's. But it's going to be very useful in quantum field theory. Okay. So projection on the ground state is equivalent to goes to infinity to compute a path integral at Euclidean time with periodic Euclidean time, but let the period goes to infinity. So that Euclidean time there now goes from minus infinity to plus infinity. So in this case, Euclidean time tau belongs to the real line. Okay, so that's quite elementary, but that's important. Okay. So now what else could I say? Yes?
So why is there no dependence on tau 1 when you take the path integral specifically at Q of tau 1?
First, since you integrate over all the intermediate position, the origin of time doesn't play any importance, any role. So if you do the calculation, you check that it doesn't depend on tau 1. But that's also, well, physically, that's because the Euclidean action, remember, the Euclidean action for a trajectory at Euclidean time is just integral of d sigma. Sigma is the Euclidean time coordinates. M over 2 dqe over d sigma squared plus d of qe sigma. Okay, and if you don't pay attention to the boundary condition, and there are no boundary condition if you are periodic, this quantity is invariant under translation. Translation in tau. So if I switch from qe of sigma any trajectory to QE of sigma plus some sigma naught, some constant, the action doesn't change. So this is a symmetry of the theory. Okay. So as usual, it's a symmetry, so there is some conserved quantity, which is analog of the energy in Euclidean time. That's exactly like in real time. And this implies that expectation value of Q cannot depend on tau 1. It's just this. That's time translation invariance in Euclidean time. Okay. And if you go back to what's happening in the theory in physical time, you know that if you take an operator, just a single operator defined in Heisenberg picture, measured at some time t, the expectation value in the vacuum of any operator doesn't depend on the time at which, because the ground state is invariant, it doesn't change under time evolution. Well, you may have a phase, but the phase is cancelled between this and this. So you know that you are in the ground state of the hydrogen atom and you measure something, it doesn't vary with time. You have to get excited state to see some time variation. Okay? It's just that. Okay? Okay. So any other question? Okay. So now let me say a few words about, well, I think you have seen that in the introduction to path integrals. But of course, one of the magic outcome of the path integral formulation in quantum mechanics is that you can see how classical physics, the law of classical physics, emerge from a fully quantum theory in an easy way in some regime. And that's simply because in the, from quantum to classical, if you consider the evolution between in real time, in physical time, between some initial time and the final time of the particles between an initial position and the final position. Okay, so this, the amplitude, the propagator, the quantum propagator is given by k equal integral dq p I over h bar s e of q. And well, the observation of Feynman, the magic observation, is that if you consider, if you are in a situation where the action of the trajectory are much bigger than h bar, which is a case where, for instance, when the particle is very massive, then what dominates in the path integral, the trajectories with extreme actions. So trajectory where when you make, so you consider a trajectory like that, and when you make a small variation, the action doesn't change much. Because then the phase doesn't change. So the trajectory that dominates are the trajectory where the first variation of this phase, namely the first order variation of the, this is the action, that's not the Euclidean action. The first variation of the action is zero, and you have to go to second order in the variation in order to see a change in the action and therefore a change in the phase. Okay. So, well, this is corroborated by a precise calculation, but that's the idea. The idea is when the trajectory is an extremal action, so when you change the quantum trajectory q of s into q of s plus delta q of s with the initial and final condition kept fixed. Okay, if the variation of the action, if the action of q plus delta q can be written of s of q plus something of order delta q squared, then this is dominant. This is the definition of a dominant action. And so you need that the first order term here vanishes. So you need simply that the variation of the action for trajectory when you make a functional derivative of q vanishes. This is a functional derivative. Okay? And therefore, this is the action, the variation of the action. Sorry. I'm going to put the variation of the action for the trajectory when you make a functional derivative with respect to the action, this has to vanish. And you have seen, I think, in the front end lecture that this is just a way to derive the Euler-Lagrange equation of motion. So this means that a trajectory that satisfies this point is then q is a classical trajectory. Okay. and a way to make this rigorous is to consider this object. This is this quantity, and formally, no, keep everything fixed. So keep everything fixed, but h bar. So consider that h bar is not a constant of nature, something given by the universe we live in, but simply by some mathematical parameter that you can fine tune in your calculation. We are doing math. So when, if we do that, and when we consider that h bar goes to zero, then that's precisely what's happening. You can show mathematically that, that in this functional integral, what dominates are the is the trajectory. In general, there is only one, which extremizes the variation of the action. Okay. In that case, the quantum propagator becomes, up to some corrections, exponential. So there is a factor, exponential I over h bar, the classical action of this classical trajectory. So there is a factor that can be computed and which is given by the variation, the second order variation, but I'm not going to write it here. Okay. So, of course, this is something that if you are a bit familiar with advanced quantum mechanics, that's a result that can be derived through just studying the properties of the solution of the Schrödinger equation. You get exactly the same result. Since path integral methods are equivalent to quantizing Schrödinger equation and the canonical quantization, should get the same result. So that's a result that one can get by the so-called WKB approximation. Okay. In canonical quantization, but that's equivalent to this method, which is called the method of the approximation of the stationary phase approximation. This equation means that the phase exponential I h bar taxi action is stationary when you make a variation. Okay. Okay. So now, just one simple remark. What about Euclidean time? In Euclidean time, the path integrals involves not a phase, but a real positive factor. Well, the functional integral is integral of a d of qe exponential minus 1 over h bar the se of qe. So this is something which is real, positive, so it's like a probability distribution. In fact, it is a probability distribution, density distribution, on the space of Euclidean trajectory. Okay. And, but you have exactly the same phenomenon. If you are interested in what's happening for a semi-classical particle, in the limit h bar goes to zero, what dominates are Euclidean trajectory, so that delta S E of Q E divided by a variation of Q E at some time tau is zero. Okay. So these are the trajectories that minimize the action. They don't minimize the phase is not extremal, but they minimize this probability. They maximize the probability. Minimize the probability T, and so there, minimize the action. Okay? Okay. And so when you have an integral where you have the exponential of minus some function and you look for the minimum of the action, you may consider this exponential, you know, you have the space of trajectories, and you have a function like that, which is the exponential of minus the action, which is maximum here. And that's what you have to keep. Okay. So in the mathematical literature, this point is called the saddle point. Okay? Because in some sense, you are between two valleys where the action is very large, so the probability is very low. But when you study what's going on, you see that here you have a saddle point. Okay. So the analog of this in Euclidean time is that you have to look for, so this is real time, physical time. And in Euclidean time, you have to look for saddle point approximation. Okay. But in fact, there is a mathematical theory that encompasses both this and this. In the more general case where you consider complex trajectory, we have seen that you go from trajectory in real time to trajectory in Euclidean time by doing a weak rotation in time, so you are working in a space where of complex trajectory, of concrete. So in fact, everything is contained in a mathematical theory called complex WKB approximation or complex saddle point approximation. Well, this is encompassed in. So now you may just ask, and I'm going to describe that a little. So what does give those equations? So this is exactly the same kind of equation than the equation for classical trajectory, except that now we have to extremize the Euclidean action, which differs from the physical action by a plus sign instead of minus sign. So in this case, for a particle in a potential, what are the solutions? The solutions are not, so of course the classical solution are just classical trajectory. A solution of equation of motion, which is m d2q or dt squared equal minus v prime of q. These are Newton's equation of motion. This is a force that derives from a gradient. Okay. And for saddle point, well, you just have to change the sign of v. So this is m d2q over d. So this is an Euclidean. Tau squared has to be equal to plus v prime of QE. Okay. So you see that the difference is just inverting the potential. But this has an important effect. For instance, if you think about an harmonic oscillator with a potential like that, of course, the classical trajectory are trajectories that bounce. That's a pendulum. They bounce between the two. While, so this is in time. And in Euclidean time, you just have to invert the potential. So you see that the classical trajectory, either they do that, or they slow down here. Here it goes very fast. Here it goes slowly. And then it goes very fast again. So either you come from there and you bounce back, or you have enough energy to pass the wall, and then you start to accelerate again. Okay, so these are classical trajectory. The solution of this kind of equation in the physics literature are called instantons. Okay. Those are complex trajectory in imaginary time. While instanton refers to solution of this kind of equation, but with a finite Euclidean action. So it's a bit more restrictive. But so you are going to meet, or you already have met this terminology, the word instanton. It's in many, many places in quantum field theory and now in math. Those are called instanton. Those are just classical trajectories. Okay. So now one last thing which is important, that probably you have met here already. And let me consider the very simple case that you have been studying, I think, in the QFT course, in the introduction to path integral, I mean, which is, let me consider just a free particle. A free particle. So the potential V is zero. So the action is just integral D. Well, let's write the Euclidean action. Is d sigma times m over 2 dqe over d sigma squared. Okay. And so the Euclidean path integral is just integral over dqe exponential minus 1 over h bar this action. Okay. Well, so this is a probability distribution on the space of trajectories in Euclidean time. So what are the trajectory that are important? Okay. So of course, the classical trajectory that dominates here. Is just a straight line. Because here the equation is that the second derivative of Q is zero, so Q is goes linearly Euclidean time. Okay. But you may ask, in this kind of path integral, here is Euclidean time, what are the trajectories that dominate around this classical trajectory? This is classical. These are the situations. And well, this is an object which is very, very well defined, has been studied a lot by mathematicians and physicists, because this is just what's called a random Brownian motion. And for a very simple reason, if you go back to the original definition of the path integral, the way one defines a path integral by splitting up time in slice and approximating this by local linear steps, see, the weight here can be written just as this exponential minus 1 over h bar se can be just rewritten as, so let me write this times 0, 1, 2, and I, and I plus 1. And at a point here, we have qi and qi plus 1. Okay, so I have a discrete trajectory. So, the discretization of this is just the sum over time intervals of the average velocity. So the action becomes sum over I of m over 2, so qi plus 1 minus qi squared divided by epsilon. where epsilon
is the step size.
Okay. So the exponential of the action is just a product of probabilities. It's a product over I of exponentials minus m over 2h bar qi plus 1 epsilon times qi plus 1 minus qi squared. So you see, it's just a product of probability. So you have some probability to go from there to there at step one, then some probability to go from step one to step two, etc. Okay. And these probabilities are independent. So if you view the trajectory, if you find the quantum trajectory in the path integral, so if you, what, you see, what is a typical trajectory? Not classical. Q. I, you can view it just as a stochastic process in time. Okay. But what's very important is that the probability, if you are there, here, the probability to go from there is given by this weight. And it's independent of you came through this trajectory or this trajectory. So it has a Markov property. So it's a Markov process. And Markov processes are a very, very important class of stochastic process because there are processes that have no memory. They may have a very complicated transition amplitudes between, but they have no memory. Okay. And this kind of Markov process, where the probability is proportional to the exponential of the distance, of the square of the distance, is just called the random Brownian motion. And it characterized just by this amplitude, which tells you what is the probability, the amplitudes of the wave. Okay. So there is a deep relation between path integrals and stochastic processes. Okay. And that's why, for instance, the name of Victor of Kach and many, many others are attached to Feynman path integrals. Okay. And in fact, I can say a few words. So since it's related to stochastic process, you can view quantum mechanics at Euclidean time as related to diffusion process. In statistical mechanics. And one way to view that is also to go back to what's going on when you work with the Schrödinger equation and ask, what is the Schrödinger equation for a free particle? Well, you know, all of you know what is the Schrödinger equation for equation. It's that I h bar d over dt of the wave function is equal to the Laplacian of psi with some coefficient. I'm right with the sign? Well, it's written somewhere. But okay. And so this is a Schrödinger equation at real time. So t is the real time. If you write, if you go to Euclidean time by making a weak rotation, you change t in minus I tau, remember. So you get minus h bar d over d tau of psi equal the Laplacian of psi. Okay. And this is an equation which is very, very famous in physics and in math. It's just the heat equation. And it goes back to Fourier in the 19th century, in the first part of the century. This is equations that gave rise to the theory of Fourier, Fourier transform, et cetera, et cetera. And that's the equation that tells you that if you have in space probability distribution like that of particles, but the particles are subject to some kind of random Brownian motion. As a function of time, they diffuse. So this is the original time. And after some time, they diffuse like that. And then they diffuse like that. That's because, oh, and then there is plus. There is this has to be. This has to be. No, that's OK. There is a minus. So when the curvature is negative, it goes down. Yeah. So when the curvature is negative, it goes down. And if the curvature is positive, it fills. Okay. So you can view this relation between stochastic process and Euclidean and quantum mechanics at Euclidean time also from the point of view of the Schrödinger equation. The Schrödinger equation becomes the heat equation, the equation that governs all simple diffusion process, linear diffusion process, which is the macroscopic equation that describes microscopic diffusion by stochastic process. Okay. So there is a deep relation. Path integrals tells you that there is a relation between probability theory, stochastic process, and therefore statistical mechanics. And we are going to see that later in QFT. Okay. And one last remark about what is the Brownian motion. And we are going to see that later. Okay. You know that if you have already seen a Brownian motion, at least in a computer simulation, you know that a Brownian motion as a function of time is something that is very regular. It's continuous, but the derivative is infinite. So it's a very irregular process. In some sense, at each time, either the velocity is minus infinity or plus infinity. But it oscillates so quickly that on the average, the velocity is finite. But it's infinite at each element of time, at each instantaneous time, which is, of course, related to the uncertainty principle in quantum mechanics. So also, we are going to see that a bit later, but there is a relation which is the quantum fluctuations. At physical time, process in physical time, and stochastic fluctuation. Or thermal fluctuation. At Euclidean time. So there are a lot of analogies and situations. Okay. So this is still very qualitative, but we're going to see that later in the case of the quantum mechanics. And you have a few more details in the notes. But okay, so any question? Sure, I would. Okay. So, well, one can continue and discuss a lot about path integrals in non-relativistic quantum mechanics, but I'd like to discuss now what is the subject of this course, which is how path integrals and why they are useful for doing quantization of non-relativistic of relativity quantum systems, so going to quantum field theory. So, and we'll see that, well, technically, path integrals now becomes what is called functional integrals. Because they are not a sum over trajectory, but a sum over field configuration. So that's an integral over functions, over on a space of function, but we are going to see that immediately. And I'm going to discuss, well, in this, the first, those lectures, we are going to discuss the simple case, which is a case of the free scalar field that you have also studied in QFT1, because that's where one can define many of the concept. So this is, of course, the result of the quantization of the Klein-Gordon field. Now, see, if you want to quantize relativistic massive particles, you have to use second quantization, and you get the quantization of an object which is a field, which is a Klein-Gordon field. It's not consistent to quantize a single relativistic massive particles, because then you run into problem with a negative probability, negative energy, so because you have to take into account the fact that you can create and annihilate particles. Quantum fluctuations force you to use a system where you have as many particles as you like, and therefore you like, and therefore deal with a Fock space, where the number of particles is not a constant. Okay. So what is a free scalar field? So I'm going to work with a relativistic, of course, particles with mass m. So m are the mass of the particles that are the quantum excitation of the field. The quanta of the fields are particles. Okay. And it's a free, namely, so that it means that there are no interactions. So it's just, you can just add particles and construct the Fock space in a very simple way. Okay, so I'm working in Minkowski space. Let's call it M of 1 and D minus 1. Okay, and remember, I'm going to consider that the metric is minus d t squared plus dx squared. Or if you prefer, let's call it h mu nu e x mu dx nu, with a Minkowski tensor being just minus 1, 1, 1, 0, 0. Okay, so I'm using the East Coast metric. Okay, and so on this Minkowski space, if we consider what is a classical field, a classical Klein-Gordon field, so the field is treated as a classical object. Okay, so we have a classical field which lives on our space-time, so it's a function phi of, so it's given by the value of the phi of x for all x belonging to Minkowski space. Okay. And the classical action for these fields that allows to recover the Klein-Gordon equation is just well, the general d-dimensional analog of the harmonic oscillator, because the modes of the Klein-Gordon field are a bunch of oscillators, independent oscillators. So it's just integral dt, integral dx over the space dimension of 1/2 of d phi over dt squared, and then minus 1/2 of the gradient with respect to x, the corresponding of phi squared. And I'm going to write this plus m over 2 pi squared. Okay, so this is a classical action for a Klein-Gordon field. And by analogy with the non-relativistic quantum mechanics, so this is a kinetic energy, and this term is a potential energy. But the potential energy involves special derivative. Okay. Okay. But of course, you can rewrite this as, in a covariant way, as dd of x, where x are the spatial coordinates, the time and space coordinates are given, called by x mu. Okay, and then this is one half of, it's minus one half of d mu phi, d mu phi, minus one half of m squared, phi squared. Note that there is a minus here and a minus here because of my choice of signature. Minus plus. Okay. So this is a covariant way to write the action. And you see that in this covariant way, the Lorentz and Poincaré invariance is obvious because the action is written in a covariant. So we have Poincaré symmetry is obvious, or clear, at least clear. Okay. Okay. Okay, so that's the object you started from by when you have been studying the canonical quantization of the Klein-Gordon field. Because you can solve the classical equation of motion, so show that there are plane waves, bunch of plane waves which do not interact, so there's collections of oscillators, and when we quantize those oscillators with the standard rules, a creation and annihilation operator, you construct the Fock space and everything. Okay. So we are going to repeat this using functional integrals. Okay, but now before doing that, I'm going to define what is the Euclidean free field. Can we perform the same trick than we did for quantum mechanics and go from Minkowski space to Euclidean space? So going to from Minkowski space 1, d minus 1, to Euclidean space in dimension d is obtained just by, as usual, changing t, writing that t is minus I tau, and do not change x. And we regroup tau and x in an Euclidean coordinate. So I am going to write xe for Euclidean as tau and x with this one. Okay. So it's just, that's exactly the same. We make a weak rotation on time, and we make no weak rotation on x. Okay. So in some sense, I think there is a picture in the notes. But if I denote this is Minkowski space-time, Minkowski, and this is space x, and this is time. What I'm going is that I'm doing a, so this is in three dimensions. So I'm going to the blackboard. Is the complex space for time. So blackboard equal complex time. And therefore I make a weak rotation. Now this is tau. And my Euclidean space time is this. So this is physical space time. This is Euclidean space. Okay. And now, what is the analog of the action, so that we called it S, the action for, what is the Euclidean action? Euclidean action. So now we have a field phi that depends on xe. Okay. So it's a function that lives here. on this space, not on this one. And what is the Euclidean action for this phi e? Well, that's the same receipt that in quantum mechanics. We keep the kinetic part, but replace the derivative with respect to t by the derivative with respect to the Euclidean time, and we change the sign of the potential term. So the Euclidean action is just integral d tau, integral over d dx minus 1 of x, times 1 half of d phi e over d tau squared, plus 1 half of gradient with respect to x of phi e squared, plus 1 half of m squared phi squared. That we can rewrite just as an integral over Euclidean spacetime, or d, well, this was an integral over Minkowski spacetime, of 1 half of d mu phi e, d mu phi e, plus m squared over 2 phi squared. Well, this is just the square of d mu phi. And on this way to write the Euclidean action, it's clear that the Poincaré symmetry became just the symmetry under Euclidean transformation. The Euclidean transformation. Rotation and translation. So Poincaré symmetry is Lorentz transformation and translation in time and space. And here we have Euclidean symmetry, which is symmetry under rotation in d-dimensional space and translation in d-dimensional space. Okay. And you can write the analog of Klein-Gordon equation. So the classical equation of motion for this are just, well, you apply, look for the apply variational principle. This is minus the Euclidean Laplacian of phi e plus m squared phi e equals 0, where this is the Euclidean Laplacian, so this is d over dx Euclidean mu squared sum over mu. One to d. Okay. Okay. So now, so this is a classical Euclidean free field. This is classical. So if we trust the idea that we can quantize a theory by this receipt of constructing a path integral, we can just, that's what people do, at what happens if you perform path integrals for the free field? So path integrals. Okay, so formally, what we have to do is instead of we have now to define an integral over old field phi. So this is an integral over functions from m 1 d minus 1 onto r. Of course, I have not specified, but phi is real. This was so obvious that I omitted to specify it. Well, you can, if phi was complex, it would, you would consider a charged scalar field, which is not easy to construct too, but phi is real. It means that no charge in the problem. Okay. So So what we'd like to do is to construct something which is going to be the analog I over h bar s of phi. Okay. So can we define such an object and can we compute with it? Okay, so that's at real time, but what we can do too is to go to Euclidean. Find an Euclidean path integral over Euclidean field configuration of exponential minus 1 over h bar s e of phi e. Okay. So this is very formal. If you want to define this in a bit more precise way, if you have to be careful, be careful. What you have to do is, we have seen, well, you have seen in the front-end lecture on path integrals that in order to define properly the path integral, you must discretize time and take the limit when the discretization goes away. Here, it's a bit more complicated because in order to make sense of what is the gradient of a random function, which can be something very irregular. For instance, what is the gradient of a Brown motion? It's something that is not, that is infinite everywhere, almost everywhere. You have also to discretize space. So the idea is, in order to be careful, you want first to, so we start from time and x, where we have a continuous space, Minkowski, and you should first discretize discrete time. But you still have a continuous space, which is going to be rd minus 1. So that's you have a stack of Euclidean space. Then it's easy to consider that now that you discretize also space. So that you get a lattice. So now your space-time so you have discrete time, you have discrete space. Okay. And so your space-time is just set of points that are on a regular array. So space-time become a lattice. So that's the proper way to define that. Okay. So instead of having continuous points, x, let's write capital X. Okay. You have discrete points, which you can denote epsilon n with n, an integer vector belonging to the integer, the set of integers to the power d. Okay. And epsilon is a time and space step, minimal step interval. So in the time direction, it's an interval, and in the x direction, it's time space. Okay, so I call this epsilon. And of course, you could have taken epsilon different in the time direction and the x direction. Or you could have taken a lattice with a more complicated geometry, but I'm going to consider just a square lattice. So for simplicity, I'm going to consider a square lattice cubic or hypercubic means that the steps are the same here and here. But that's just for simplicity. You can work out a more general case, and it won't be more difficult, and it won't change the final result. OK. So in this case, so space-time is now a lattice, it's discrete. And in this case, you have to discretize the action. So if you want to discretize the action, and let's consider the Euclidean action. If you want to discretize the action, you have to replace the time derivative by finite difference and the space gradient also by finite difference. Okay? And so if you check, what you find is that the discretized action is, in the case of the Euclidean action, if you like, you can do the same thing. You are just going to replace SE phi E discrete. Well, I'm going to omit the E subscript because I consider the Euclidean action. So what you are going to do, you are going to, at each site, I associate a phi n, which is the value of the field at the site n. Okay, so that's the analog of, so I can write this xn. So phi n is just the value of the disk file on this discretized space xn. Okay, so you have a bunch of real variable at each point of the lattice. And now the natural discretization is that you replace the integral by a sum over the points. So I replace this by a sum over n z to the power d on the lattice. The measure dxe is just the volume element, the mesh. So it's just epsilon to the power d. Okay. And then I replace this by finite difference. So finite difference means that at a given point here, I consider all its forward neighbors. So I get 1 over half, and I sum from the indices mu equal 1 to d. And then I take, so this corresponds to the sum of a mu. Then I consider the finite difference, which is phi of n plus e mu minus phi of n divided by epsilon square, where e mu is a unit vector in direction mu. Okay. You have vectors, so e mu is just a vector which is 0, 0 everywhere except at position mu. So that you take the derivative in this u direction. And then the second term is just the square of the field, so it's m squared over 2 times phi of n squared. Okay? So this is a discretized Euclidean action. So that's important. And let me write it. And of course, you can define similarly a discretized real-time action. And you just have to change the signs for this term and for this term for the space direction, which are from 2 to d, and keep a plus sign for the first direction, which is time. So it's an exercise. Write the same thing for the action at physical time. Okay. So this is the classical action for a classical field, a field defined on a discretized spacetime. And now we have to define this path integral. So this path integral, we are just going to write what is the measure. And if you work out the measure, you find that it's what you expect. It's just an independent integral over the value of the field at the different sites. So the dE, so the measure is, so dE of phi is just the product over the sites in the lattice. Okay, is it visible? And then you have an independent measure over d, d phi n. And you have a factor, you have a normalization factor in order to make everything consistent, which you can work out by analogy with the case of the quantum mechanics. Okay. Because you may consider that you have quantum mechanics on a system which has many, many degrees of freedom, and just apply the rules. And if you apply the rules, what you get is something that I don't remember by heart, but it's very simple. You get 2 pi h bar over epsilon to the power d minus 2 times minus 1/2. And that's for each. So it's a product of this measure for each site. This is a measure. It's simply products of a local that measure at each site or point of discretized spacetime. Okay. And now the functional integral is just given by this. You integrate over all fields value with this measure and with this action with weight minus 1 over h bar. Okay? So this is the action. This is the measure. And this is the functional integral. Okay. And that's it. That's what we need in order to compute things. If we can compute. Okay. That's a bit dreadful. Okay. Okay, so can we compute with this generalization of path integral, which is now a functional integral? So of course, what you have to take is to get to go back to Minkowski to continuous space-time. You have to take what is called the continuum limit, which consists in going back to the limit when the mesh, your space-time lattice, goes to zero. And Well, so one has to study and to compute to see whether this integral, which seems to exist, makes sense in the continuum limit. And you see that there is already something which is not completely obvious, that in discrete space-time, you have no more Poincaré invariants or Euclidean invariants. You have the discrete symmetries. Of the lattice. And you have to check whether in this limit we recover Poincaré or Euclidean symmetry, which is not completely obvious. And in fact, this may seem a bit, you know, a technical problem. And in fact, in this case, it's a technical problem. But this reflects something which is important in quantum field theory. In quantum field theory, in order to define properly your theory, usually using path integrals, you have to use some kind of discretization of what's called regularization. And I think you have met already this idea of regularization in QFT1. Regularization is something which is both technically needed and also most probably deeply ingrained in our universe, because everyone now knows that at very high energy or very small distance, there is a Planck's length and Planck's mass, where the rules of quantum mechanics are going to be either changed or taken into account gravity. So there is something, we know that somewhere this kind of calculation do not make sense in our universe. Okay. So we have to use the regularization in general. And when you have a classical theory which has some symmetry, introducing this, taking into account this regularization effect and taking the continuum limit where they can be neglected, sometimes the symmetry, well, often, most often, the symmetry we expected in the classical theory is recovered, but sometimes it is not. And when it is not, it's a phenomenon called anomaly. And I think you have already heard a bit about it in QED. We are going to come back later. But in this case, for the free field, you have no anomaly. So what I'm going to explain now is okay. But for more complicated theory, there are anomalies. Okay, so this is the first remark. The second remark is that when you consider this, which is in some sense the Euclidean partition function of a system, you just do sum over configuration where you have a lattice and you have variables that vary on the lattice. And there is a term that says that there is a coupling between neighboring interactions. So this discrete Euclidean lattice, discrete Euclidean functional integral for the free field, in fact, is mathematically the same thing than the partition function at finite temperature for a lattice of harmonic oscillator linearly coupled. We can view this as a partition function of a lattice of harmonic oscillators with linear couplings. For the oscillator are harmonic, the couplings are linear, and the couplings are linear coupling between nearest neighbor. Because this point is only connected to its nearest neighbor on the lattice. Okay. And so, and this is done just by doing, you know, some kind of a dictionary. If you write that the action, so you assume that, okay, so the supposition xn is just, the dictionary is that the position xn, let me write it, it's just the site n site on the lattice. Okay. The value of the field phi n is just the degrees of freedom of the classical oscillator at site n. Okay, the action of a configuration can be written just as the classical energy function, so the classical energy of a microstate. Okay? So you can say I am summing over a configuration of oscillator on this lattice. This is the energy of the lattice. And then what is this? H bar here. If you view this, you have a sum and you have a Boltzmann factor, and the Boltzmann factor is exponential of minus 1 over H bar, the energy. So H bar plays the role of the temperature. Let me write. So H bar in the classical model plays the role of the temperature of the system, which is a classical system. So this is different from the temperature we discussed before. This is an analogy between a quantum system at zero temperature, because I consider an infinite lattice, so quantum system at zero temperature, and here I have a classical system, so there is no H bar, but H bar in this mathematical formulation plays the role of the temperature, the classical system. Okay? So we have that. We have a quantum system in d minus 1 space dimension and one time dimension. So one time d minus 1 space dimensions. And here we have the classical system in d dimensions, classical extended system, a lattice of harmonic oscillators. And H bar in those formula plays a role of the temperature of the classical system. Okay. And therefore, in the calculations that we are going to do, the quantum fluctuations of this quantum field are going to be analogous to the thermodynamical or thermal fluctuation of this classical system. Okay. And this analogy goes on. And I won't discuss it more here. But we probably come back. But that's the analogy that you have to take. Okay. And that's important, because this is going to be the crucial point to make the point between quantum field theory and statistical mechanics in randomization groups. So you are going to recognize, well, I think you recognize already system you have studied in this statistical mechanics course. In statistical mechanics course, you studied in great detail the Ising model. So the Ising model in the C++ version is defined on a square or cubic lattice. The only difference between the Ising model and this system of harmonic oscillator is that the variables take two values, plus or minus one, spins. While here, the degrees of freedom goes from minus infinity to plus infinity. Otherwise, it's exactly like an Ising model. But the fact that the degrees of freedom are real makes it different. We are not considering the Ising model. Here, we are considering a classical model of funds, in fact. We have a crystal. We have elastic forces between the atoms of the crystal. And we are studying the classical mechanics, the classical statistical mechanics, or the thermodynamics of a classical crystal, and study how phonons are excited. How the sounds, you know, how you get sound waves out of a crystal when you eat. Okay. Okay, so I think I can stop there. And tomorrow we are going to, well, use this definition of the functional integral for the free field to compute physical quantities, like especially the correlation function, the vacuum expectation value of operator, and see that this functional integral formalism allows very easily to recover the same object that the object you have been considering in computing in QFT1 course by canonical quantization. We are going to discuss the relation between both. Okay. Thank you. Any question? Don't be shy.